the usual stuff. Then I'm going to talk about the experimental techniques, X-ray absorption spectroscopy, and resonant soft X-ray scattering, which are probably unfamiliar to many of you. And then I'll talk about the meat of the talk, which will be on our measurements of resonant elastic X-ray scattering in this material here, this stripe border material. And the idea is to use the energy dependence of the resonant scattering to try and understand the electronic modulation that's occurring in the stripe border phase. Okay, so the material we're looking at is crystal structure shown here. And the important thing with these materials, with cuprates, is the copper oxide plane. So in the center, there's a square lattice of copper and oxygen where all of the interesting physics of cuprates is occurring. So the key ingredients of the square lattice of this copper oxide plane are the copper dx squared minus y squared orbitals and the oxygen px and py orbitals. So for my purposes, a minimal three-band model is really what we need to describe the X-ray absorption, and we're looking at these three orbitals here. So these materials, the cuprates, are what we call charge transfer insulators. So often referred to as doped mod insulators, but they're really charge transfer insulators. And what that means is that when we dope the holes onto the cuprates, and we look at the doping phase diagram, the holes are going primarily onto the oxygen p orbitals, and we see them on the copper through some hybridization. So the ground, or the undoped parent compound of the cuprates is a state where there's little holes on the oxygen, and we just have a single hole in this copper dx squared minus y squared orbital. So when we look at this phase diagram, when we vary the carrier concentration, so in this material that's done by substituting strontium for lanthanum, we map out this phase diagram where the undoped parent compound is a antiferromagnetic mod insulator, and then we've got this famous unconventional D-wave superconductor that occurs at some finite doping. And then in addition to that, there's a whole host of other interesting physics. And Eduardo showed a phase diagram for LBCO, which had a dip in the D-wave superconducting dome here. And at that dip, at a doping of 1/8, there was this susceptibility to some stripe-ordered phase. So in this low-doped region, I'm drawing it as a box. It's not this isn't really a real serious phase diagram. But in this low-doped region in the cuprates, there's some susceptibility to spin and charge density wave order of various varieties. So I'm going to focus on stripe ordering that occurs in lanthanum-doped cuprates. So this was static stripe ordering was first discovered by John Trinquata and collaborators in 1995. In this seminal work in this Nature paper here. And with elastic neutron scattering, they found evidence for both spin density wave order and charge density wave order. And this ordering was incommensurate with the lattice and had peaks at wave vectors that would correspond to roughly to a period 4 modulation in the charge and a period 8 modulation in the spin. And an initial proposal for this spin and charge order was something like this, depicted here. So where the charge forms rivers of charge, known as stripes, and then in between that, there are undoped regions with antiferromagnetic order that's antiphase on either side of the stripe. So this was a beautiful work, and this was one proposal for the stripe ordering. Now, one of the problems with the neutron scattering measurements investigating the CDW order and also subsequent hard X-ray scattering measurements was that with these measurements, what they're mostly detecting is some lattice displacement that is induced by a charge ordering. And it's indirectly sensitive to a real modulation in charge density. So that changed a little bit in 2005 when Peter Abamonte did some beautiful resonant soft X-ray scattering measurements, where they do a measurement at the oxygen K absorption edge and see an enhancement of the scattering intensity at this pre-edge structure. And I'll describe in detail how we understand these energy dependences. But this was interpreted as a direct measurement that there was some modulation in the charge density in this stripe-ordered, and this charge stripe border phase. So now I'm going to switch, and I'll come back to those resonance scattering measurements. But first, I'd like to describe a little bit about these techniques, X-ray absorption and resonant soft X-ray scattering. So with X-ray absorption spectroscopy, this is one of the techniques that lets us know things like that the cuprates are a charge transfer insulator. So X-ray absorption spectroscopy is an element and orbital sensitive probe. And the basic idea is that we shine an X-ray on a material and we excite some tightly bound core electron up above the Fermi energy into some unoccupied state. So different elements have different binding energies for the core electrons. And if we go to a different photon energy, we can probe different elements. And the other key feature is that this is a dipole allowed process. So if we have a 1s core electron, we have to have delta L equals 1. So a 1s core electron will get excited into an unoccupied 2p state, for instance. So the spectra that one gets then from X-ray absorption tells us something about the element and orbital projected states in the material. So here's a crude calculation of the X-ray absorption in yttrium barium copper oxide, and at 530 electron volts or thereabouts is what we call the oxygen K edge, and that corresponds to an excitation of the 1s core electron into some unoccupied 2p state, and that when we have enough, when our photon energy is high enough, exceeds the Fermi energy, we get a jump in the absorption. We have this, we've opened up a channel for absorption, and we call this an absorption edge. If we go to a higher energy, 930 electron volts, we get to the copper L edge, and that's a 2p to 3d excitation. So these two edges, which lie in the soft X-ray region of the electromagnetic spectrum, are the most interesting orbitals to study for the cuprate. So they allow us to probe the oxygen 2p states and the copper 3d states, which I said are the most important orbitals in these materials. So this is some early X-ray absorption measurements by C.T. Chen's group on lanthanum strontium copper oxide as a function of doping. And this sort of demonstrates so this is a zoom in on this absorption edge. And this sort of shows us what occurs when we dope holes into these materials. So for x equals 0, this is the undoped parent compound, which is a correlated insulator state. And there should be a gap at the Fermi energy. And this first peak here, labeled B, corresponds to the upper Hubbard band in this material. So B equals upper Hubbard band. As we increase the doping in the material, so these offset figures here are the an increase in the doping, so substituting strontium for lanthanum increases P and gets us into a D-wave superconductor state. When we increase the doping, we get the onset of this peak here, which corresponds to states near the Fermi energy. And these would be the mobile carriers that would be really be contributing to superconductivity. We also get a transfer spectral weight from B to A, and that's somewhat predicted by what we'd expect for doping a charge transfer insulator. But that's another story. So another thing about this the spectra here, we can kind of divide it up into this low-energy pre-edge structure here, which corresponds to those oxygen P orbitals hybridized with the copper 3D orbitals. And this changes pretty dramatically when we dope holes into the material. Whereas at higher energy, we have oxygen hybridized with states of lanthanum and strontium and other things. There's little doping dependence, and these states really aren't really contributing very much to a lot of the interesting low-energy physics of the material. So that was the oxygen edge, where we're seeing large changes in this pre-edge structure corresponding to doping holes onto the oxygen P orbitals. In contrast, if we look at the copper L edge, which corresponds to a 2p to 3d excitation, and we're looking at unoccupied 3d states, we get a Lorentzian-like peak here that corresponds to a single hole in a dx squared minus y squared orbital. And then when we change the doping, this main peak doesn't change all that much, and what we get is additional states here at this shoulder-like feature, where this corresponds to the copper hybridized with the oxygen. So we'd call this a D9 ligand hole peak. In the language of X-ray absorption spectroscopy and small clusters. Okay, so that's the X-ray absorption. But the technique we're really interested in is resonant soft X-ray scattering. And the idea with this technique is to do an X-ray diffraction measurement where you sensor to spatial order and combine that with X-ray spectroscopy. So we do an X-ray diffraction measurement on an X-ray absorption edge. And when you do that, the atomic scattering form factor that enters into your expression for the structure factor becomes energy dependent and also polarization dependent, and will in general be enhanced on an absorption edge. And that enhancement is an enhancement that you can associate with the specific electronic orbitals that you're studying at your absorption edge. So you get a F of omega being sensitive to the same things your absorption is sensitive to. So you can be sensitive to valence modulations, the spin state of particular elements, and the orbital orientation of particular elements. So then you've got a probe that you can use to study a variety of exotic electronic ordered states, like spin charge and orbitally ordered modulations. So we want to use this to look at the stripe ordered phase in neodymium doped LSCO. So this is work my graduate student Andrew Ashkar here at Waterloo, using a new facility at the Canadian Light Source that was led by George Sawatsky. And this is on samples grown by Young-Jun Kim and Harry Zhang at the University of Toronto. So that's just some data, and I'll get back to this in a moment. So this new facility, this is something I've spent a good part of the last 4 or 5 years working on constructing. So this is a REXUS beamline at the synchrotron in Saskatoon, the Canadian Light Source. This was an $8.5 million project to build this beamline and a couple of end stations. And this is a custom four-circle diffractometer for measurements in ultra-high vacuum with a closed-cycle cryostat and a lot of detector options. And I could talk all day about this instrument, but I'll skip on to the data. So I should note that this instrument was commissioned over the last year and is now open for general user proposals. So if somebody has a good idea for resonance scattering measurements, they can apply for beam time and go and do an experiment. Okay, so here's some of our data on resonance scattering in neodymium-doped LSCO. And what we're seeing here is a scattering measurement taking at the peak of the copper L3 absorption edge. So it's at this peak here. And if we cool the sample down to low temperature below the stripe-ordered transition temperature, we get a peak when we do a scan in reciprocal space at H0 1.5. So H is in reciprocal lattice units, and we're getting a peak centered at 0.236 in this case. Now, if we raise the temperature up, we get some broad background, and our peak is some small bump on top of that broad background. So this is a somewhat challenging experiment. We've got a very large fluorescent background. So when we shine X-rays on the material just fluoresce, and we get a lot of background that's broad in angle that we need to subtract off if we're interested in the X-ray scattering. So this background will change with the photon energy, and also our scattering intensity will change with the photon energy. So we've done this measurement at a whole range of photon energies. We fit and subtract off the background, and then I'm going to plot the integrated intensity of this super lattice peak here. So this is plots of our measurements of the scattering intensity in black at both the oxygen K edge and the copper L edge as a function of photon energy. And in blue is the X-ray absorption as a function of photon energy. So the next thing we want to do is to analyze the energy dependence of the scattering intensity, because it really tells us something about what kind of electronic modulation we have in these materials. So what we can do is we can just write down some general expression for the energy dependence of the scattering intensity. And that should be a sum over lattice sites, where we can assign a different atomic scattering form factor to different sites if we've got some modulation in the valence or some other electronic modulation. And then we can also ascribe some lattice distortion. So if in the stripe-ordered phase, our atoms are displaced from their equilibrium positions in the non-stripe-ordered phase, that would introduce a different energy dependence to the scattering. So we'll look first at these two models that I've sort of sketched out here. So in the valence modulation model, we're going to sort of pick out two sites, give them a different doping, and then try and model the atomic scattering form factor for these sites. So What we need to do then for these models and to understand the energy dependence is to know what the energy dependence of this atomic scattering form factor is. So this is an optical quantity. It's complex, so it has a real and imaginary part. And similar to optics, we can relate the imaginary part to the absorption coefficient and then do a Kramer's Kronig transformation to determine the real part from the imaginary part. So we're going to employ this this sort of procedure. And what we need then is X-ray absorption measurements that correspond to the atomic scattering form factor for different sites in our lattice. Okay. Okay. So this is sort of the scheme. We've got some X-ray absorption. We do a Kramer's Kronig transformation. We get the real imaginary part of the atomic scattering form factor. Okay, so the first model I want to look at is some valence modulation or charge density modulation. So I get a scattering intensity given by the difference between the atomic scattering form factor where we have a different doping on our different sites. So this with this sort of picture, what we can use is X-ray absorption measurements as a function of doping. So this is some data, again, from CT Chen, old data. As a function of doping, and we can employ this relation between the absorption and the atomic scattering form factor and deduce the atomic scattering form factor for sites with a different charge doping. So this is calculations of F for these two dopings, and this was work done with Jörg Fink that I collaborated on a couple of years ago. So this sort of procedure was done in the past in both LBCO and this work by Peter Obamonte that I mentioned already, and then also in this work by Jörg Fink in europium-doped LSCO. And in red, in both cases, is the measured scattering intensity, and in purple and blue is the result of these calculations where we've had some valence modulation. And there's things to like about these this comparison, but also things to not like. So what it's giving us is a calculated scattering intensity that's peaked at around the right energies, but it really doesn't have the right shape. So you wouldn't really call this a great fit to the data in either case. So that's at the oxygen K edge. We can do the same thing at the copper. Here's a comparison with our data. And it's qualitatively similar to the other two cases. And peaked at sort of the right energies, but not a good fit to the line shape. So here's a comparison. So we can also do this at the copper L edge. And with the copper L edge, I noted earlier that the major change in doping at the copper L edge is in the shoulder region. So if we do this Kramer's Kronig transformation for some data as a function of doping at the copper L edge and do a calculation, what we get, not too surprisingly, is that the calculation for a charge modulation on the copper would predict a peak that has shifted about 1 eV away from our measured scattering intensity. So what this is telling us, I think, is that the stripe order phase does not really correspond to a modulation of the charge density on the copper. So if that's not the case, then the alternative seemingly was to look at a lattice distortion. So if we just had, if we forgot about a valence modulation and just had a lattice distortion, what we would have is a picture where each site has the same F of omega, but and that leads to a scattering intensity that goes as F of omega squared, roughly. So if we do that, what we get is this blue curve here, which is peaked at the right energy now, but is too broad in energy to really account for the measured data. So this is a comparison covering both the L3 and L2 edges, and it also doesn't capture the right ratio of peak intensities between these two edges. Okay, so also this works even less well for the oxygen K edge, where the calculation would predict some large scattering intensity at higher energies, where we're measuring essentially zero scattering intensity. So I would say neither of these pictures is really accounting for this stripe order phase particularly well. So our next approach was to sort of led us to try something else, and that something else was to look at orbital energy modulation. So this is a just a tag we've placed on this phenomenological model. And this phenomenological model is to take different sites in the lattice and just shift the energy of the atomic scattering form factor by some small value delta omega between different sites. So if we have two sites, we've got f omega plus delta omega on one and minus delta omega on the other. Okay, so it's just taking the sort of the same data we showed earlier and just shifting it between two sites. So when we do that, we get what I think is excellent agreement between the experiment and the calculation. So this is a zoom in on the comparing the calculated in magenta and the black is our measured data at the L3 edge. But if we blow this up and look at both the L3 and L2 absorption edges, it captures both the right width to the peak, but also the right ratio between the L3 and L2 absorption edges. So I think this is really describing the data well, at least phenomenologically. I think this is also working particularly well for the oxygen K edge. So when we do the same sort of prescription at the oxygen K edge, we capture this pre-edge structure quite well. And I'm calling this excellent agreement. And no, I'm not blind. I see that there's this big blob here that is where our measurement is giving us zero intensity. But I would argue, as I said earlier, that these higher energy states are really corresponding to 5 minutes? Okay. That these higher energy states are really corresponding to the oxygen P states hybridized with states of lanthanum and strontium and copper 4 P states. So I think what this calculation is telling us is it's just the states that are the oxygen P and copper 3D states that are hybridized at low energies that are shifted in energy and not these higher lying states. Okay. So that's it's a bit of a phenomenological model, and the question is, what is this really telling us about the charge density wave state or the charge ordered state in the cuprates? And the way I think about these sorts of problems and the way I'd want to model an X-ray absorption spectra or a resonant scattering experiment, say at the copper L edge, would be to construct a small cluster model of the copper with some oxygen around it. And I would parameterize that by a bunch of parameters such as the copper on-site Coulomb repulsion, the hybridization between the copper and the oxygen P states, and crystal field splittings and things like that. And if I take some of those parameters, such as the on-site Coulomb repulsion, and I just modulated that by a small amount, what I would get is a shift in the peak of the orbital energies and a shift in the copper X-ray absorption. So I think what this orbital energy modulation is telling us is that we have some modulation in the parameters that are describing our electronic structure at a local level. So this is sort of the picture I have here. And I think the interesting thing is that we could get this sort of modulation in the parameters of small clusters without having a significant modulation in the charge density in the stripe ordered phase. So this is, I think, quite contrary to the accepted picture of the stripe ordered phase in the cuprates. And I was just thinking about this over the weekend, and I think if one were to construct an effective model from this sort of orbital energy modulation picture or modulation in parameters like UDD and TPD, you might end up with something that starts to look like a valence bond solid. So this sort of picture has been proposed for stripe ordering phases, and there's a bunch of variants of this. And I just sort of started reading about this, so I'd be open to any comments or questions regarding what this sort of orbital energy modulation picture can mean. Okay, so I'll sum up and just say that I think our resonant scattering intensity is consistent with a picture where the orbital parameters are modulated in the charge density wave ordered state. And I think this may be leading in the direction of evidence for some valence bond order in the cuprates.
Questions? We'll start up here.
Do Do you have any direct evidence that it's modulated, or could it just be that the orbital parameters are different for the two oxygens in the same unit cell?
I think you know, just because this peak is coming from at a Q vector of a 1/4 or around 1/4, it really has to have that sort of periodicity, and it can't be just in a single unit cell. We really can't establish that, I think. We really need some serious microscopic model to be able to, I haven't even begun to do any sort of calculations to try and model our energy dependence. This is just a crude phenomenological model. So I don't think at this point we can answer that question. And at this point, we also don't know which parameters would actually be modulated, whether it's U or... Oh, so I used a value of 0.125 for this splitting, but actually that line shape doesn't really depend on the value of delta omega that I choose. So you can think of it as just taking a derivative, for instance, for small values of delta omega. So that only changes the magnitude of the calculation, but not the width, not the energy dependence.
So this is related, I guess, to what Seamus was asking you. In this material, like in LBCO, you have the LTT structure, right?
Pardon?
The planes are orthorhombic, and the orthorhombicity rotates from plane to plane.
Right.
So there must be, therefore, some inequivalency between the two planes. So the question is it possible to obtain independently in information of where these parameters, how these parameters change from one plane to the next?
I think we're pretty restricted in that we can only study Bragg peaks with low Q. So if we had access to study two plus Q, zero L as well, then we may be able to address things like that. But because we're restricted to basically studying a single Bragg peak, we really can't tell a lot about the structure factor in these materials. Right. So
then in some sense, you're seeing some sort of average between them.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And so the oxygens could well be inequivalent along the two directions, but since they rotate from one plane
yes,
to the next, you're
yeah.
seeing some average effect.
Yes. Yeah, so I should say a couple of things that this, I think this, you know, this model is a bit of a simple, naive model that I'm just trying to kind of grasp at what the essential physics is. But also I think that these results don't necessarily rule out some charge density modulation or a lattice distortion, which is clearly observed in neutron scattering and hard X-ray scattering. It's just that the energy dependence of the resonant scattering is really dominated by some orbital energy modulation.
Okay, are there any other questions? Okay, we'll take one more.
If I remember correctly, in neutron scattering also, the amount of lattice modulation is very tiny.
Yeah.
So can you put some bound on the lattice modulation or charge modulation from your experiment?
I think at this point we really can't. Now, it could be with improved data, or there's some subtle differences between the our calculation and the measurements that maybe indicate some charge density modulation. But I really wouldn't want to make some any sort of clear statement about what the magnitude of the charge modulation or the lattice distortion is from this data.
Okay, so I think we'll end this session. We'll start again at 1:30, but let's thank David and the other speakers once more.